powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
The Seahawks are 3-0, an undefeated team, sole undefeated team left in the NFC West. Russell Wilson off of another strong performance, 5 touchdowns, 315 yards. If you can believe it, after that performance, his passer rating actually went down. That's how good he's been. He still leads the league, though. And, of course, there are some things that are a little concerning. Defense gave up 522 net yards to the Dallas Cowboys. We'll get into some things the team will need to fix. A few injury updates, too, from Pete Carroll on This Morning with Danny and Gallant. But first, Tom, Jake, you guys, this game was another, what do I say, like a heart, not a heartbreaker. It was anxiety provoking, for sure. It was exhilarating. But when it came to a heart stopper, it came down once again to a stop in the end zone in the final seconds of the game. And Seattle got away with a win here.
They sure did. I mean, this is, when you talk about this game, it was another Seahawks Sunday. It was another dramatic, gripping the edge of your seat type of victory. And they are must watch every single week, guys. I mean, Russell Wilson not only broke an NFL touchdown passing record, but also reminded us that he is who you want as your quarterback with the game on the line, as he orchestrated his 33rd game-winning drive in the fourth quarter and overtime since 2012, which leads the league. I mean, you talk about the moments in the sequencing of the games. At the end of it all, you have the Seahawk offense on the field. You have Russell Wilson behind center. And you know you've got an unbelievable chance to win the game. Here's Pete Carroll talking about how there's nobody better at the end of games than Russ.
We're so accustomed to it. We absolutely are just anticipating that we're going to go score. Russ and I look. There was a moment in there we said, you know, field goal wins it. And then we looked at each other and said, we're going for a touchdown. And it was really cool to see him compete again like he does. He was so chilled. He was so perfectly poised and composed to pull that together. You couldn't ask for a guy that could be better mentally in those situations than Russell is.
So you have those moments. And no, it wasn't because they were conservative all throughout the game and they just waited to the fourth quarter. They were aggressive all the way throughout. Russell Wilson throwing 5 touchdown passes, but really 6 touchdown passes in this game. There were certainly moments, Tom and Stacy, that just made you want to tear your hair out. Obviously with the DK Metcalf mistake that you know he is just very frustrated about and wish he could have back. And then the defense giving up huge plays. But let's not forget, guys, that there were also moments for that defense where they were opportunistic and they made critical plays in pivotal moments as well. This team, after 3 weeks being 3-0, they're going to be a problem for anyone in the NFL if they can clean things up defensively.
I'm patient. I'm a very patient man watching this Seahawks team this year. I mean, watching them offensively, I think we're already spoiled. They're near perfect. I mean, we had a very short discussion this morning about how Russell's throws, a couple of them weren't perfect. They were low, maybe a little bit behind. If you remember, a couple of the throws to Tyler Lockett, a few of them maybe when, you know, sailing over receivers, even though they went up and actually made the plays. Think about that. Russell just being short of perfect causes consternation. That's how good he is. That's how good the offense is.
Troy Aikman certainly let us know about that too, Tom.
Look, Jake, yeah, we get it. You hate Troy Aikman. Tom, please finish.
Yeah, well, I had to hear about that actually a lot in my household. So, Jake, you're not the only one. But look, I am so comfortable with this team as a Super Bowl contender in the NFC right now. I mean, they're 3-0. I'm not going to oversimplify it and say, well, your record is what they say. Or what's the saying? You are what your record says you are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're 3-0. Yes. And they've got, I guess, what I'd call some weaknesses. But there could be a lot of different reasons for that. You can list me passing yards all day, giving up. I really don't care. This is what the Seahawks team has always been, at least since about 2015. They make big plays when they have to. They did that all day yesterday while the Cowboys penalized themselves out of the building. So watching this team this year so far has been probably by a lot the most enjoyable team that I've watched, maybe going back to probably 2014 or 2015. Like, I am on board with this team 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
100%. I don't worry about the defense at all. I'm just not worried. They're not good. They're not great, but I'm just not worried.
Hold up. You're not worried? I know that, you know, we're going to start with some hype, some positivity. There's so much to be happy about with this team. Don't get me wrong, though. At 12:45, we're going to jump into our grades for the defense. Tom, I know you gave them a C. C's get degrees, so you can be happy about that. But I wouldn't say there's nothing to be worried about. I mean, I think there's a question of whether or not, what does this team look like when Russell Wilson's not at an MVP level? And maybe the question instead becomes, what if he is throughout the season? What if he continues to play like this? I will say, though, this is how rare this is. He is the first quarterback in NFL history to start his games, first three games of the season, with four more touchdowns in a game.
The only thing that there is to worry about is whether or not this team can make a Super Bowl. That's the only thing to worry about. I'm not worried because I think that they can do it with what they have. Not to say that there aren't weaknesses. There are. I wouldn't call them a complete team. You know, you look at Kansas City, they feel like they're complete, and we'll see more of them tonight. And they'll get a big test against Baltimore tonight. But with the Seahawks, are there weaknesses? Yeah, Trey Flowers either can't play cornerback as a starter, or they're using him incorrectly or something, and they've got injury problems too, and some, you know, rookie, whatever, that's fine. But I'm not worried that they can't get to a Super Bowl with the personnel that they're running out there. I think they absolutely can.
Now, maybe it's those star-studded glasses you got on there, Tommy. Maybe that's what's got you,
feeling
so good and
John.
So fresh. Yes, right. An L. Tom John type of vibe here. But I do agree that there are more positives about this team and about their chances of really going into a deep playoff run, into a Super Bowl run, then there are negatives. Now, I don't want to be one of those people that just closes their eyes and says, oh, no, I'm just not going to look at what happens on defense. I'm not going to do it. You can't make me. I'm not going to address it. Because there are serious problems and issues with this defense, and it's not just them giving up 400 yards or 500 yards. It's no big deal. We'll kind of break down even more so as to why. But when you continuously give up big plays like they were defensively, it puts you in a tough, tough position. And now we're starting to see a trend here. And even the head coach is starting to notice that here in cut number one, DJ. Pete Carroll talking about how trends are emerging from these games so far in three weeks.
It was a good finish. It was a good football game again, and we're seeing a real common kind of format for the games, you know, and a lot of offense and way too many big plays on us on defense, but a ton of big plays on offense that's just making the difference. And fortunately, in this one, we were able to get the ball off them, you know, really four times when you count the safety. So that's playing winning football, and it's been hard, but we're growing. We got a lot of growing to do here. We're going to get a lot better, and so I'm thrilled that we're 3-0 and still learning how to play our football the way we want to play it, and looking forward to the next one.
The last couple phrases there from Pete Carroll is what I'm hanging on to. We will get better, and I do believe that phrase. While at the same time you're working to get better and clean things up, you've got Russell Wilson, this offense, that's just playing at an entirely different level and is playing at a level that is record-breaking.
And let's talk about Russell Wilson in this offense. At this point in the game, you're late in the fourth quarter. Seahawks get the ball with less than 4 minutes remaining. Dallas is up 31 to Seattle's 30 points. Now, a field goal is going to technically win the game. You're obviously going to get Dallas with a chance to march back down the field. Instead, on 3-3, you have Russell Wilson with this touchdown to DK Metcalf.
Russell looks, sets, has time. Going to throw to the end zone. Locked. It's DK! He makes the catch! Touchdown! Seahawks! I couldn't see him for a second, and suddenly he flashes in the end zone, and it's DK Metcalf, and he, in fact, makes up for the play earlier. And it's only fitting, isn't it, that he's the guy who comes up with the big reception, the touchdown, with 1:47 left to play.
It certainly is fitting, Raves, because DK Metcalf, as we know, fumbled the ball in the first quarter for a touchback on what would have been a sixth touchdown for Russell Wilson that day. But, Tom, when you look at this team, and Jake, I want you to speak on this too, because I know you talked about fourth quarter comebacks. Russell Wilson leading yet another here for Seattle. But you talk about the aggressiveness on this drive. Pete Carroll spoke with Danny and Gallant earlier today, and I don't have the cut. I'll just tell you what he said. He said there was a moment on that final drive where he looks at Russell Wilson and says, hey, a field goal is going to win this. And they both look at each other, and then he says, but we're going for a touchdown. That's the kind of aggressiveness that you haven't really seen from this offense before. I mean, they are leaning into it, leaning into Russell Wilson, leaning into scoring early and scoring often and really striking when they can.
Yeah, I don't have – look – I almost feel spoiled saying this, but when they're down 1 point, 2 points, whatever it is, and they get the ball back under 2 minutes to go, my only worry is, okay, how much time are they going to leave on the clock? I know they're going to score. I know that they're going to be able to at least get in field goal range, and I know Russell wants to put the ball into the end zone, and that's great. He will. He will. I mean, I'm speaking to the audience and both of you here. Did any of you have any doubt that they were going to score in that situation? Did you? We've seen it so many times. I mean, last week against New England, it was the same question. How much time would they leave on the clock? Would they leave Cam Newton too much time? Ultimately, they did, but they made the stop, right? Same thing here. They ended up coming up with an interception. So offensively, any situation, beginning of game, end of half, beginning of half, end of the game, they can execute it. I'm just not worried. In fact, I'm thrilled and spoiled already in week three to be watching this team.
I agree with you, Tom. I felt confident, and I was actually telling this to Stacy on Friday, that if it becomes a dueling fest between Dak Prescott and Russell Wilson, sign me up, because I'm going to take Russell Wilson in that showdown every single time. And that's ultimately what it turned into. But I also look at those moments from Russell Wilson, and we also talked about how Russell's just playing with a different conviction. He's playing with a different attitude. And those are moments that I think Russell's always had in his nine seasons as a Seahawk. But it just goes to show that this guy's just playing with an absolute killer instinct right now, and it's carrying the football team.
Let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
Yeah, protecting the kids, all right. I have not heard this from Rabel yet, so I can't wait. Cut number 13, roll it.
Russell Wilson is now up over 143 on his quarterback rating. Drops back seven steps. Looks, he's going to let it fly again. DK Metcalf out there. He's open. He's got the catch. He is in. Did he get to the end zone? I don't know if he broke the plane of the end zone. The ball was slapped out of his hands, and it went out the back of the end zone. Let's see. Did he break the plane? If he did not, it is going to be a touchback.
Jake, you look
all
mad.
Right.
Okay, now this is a question for Jake and Stacey, but I want y'all out there to answer it as well. 710-710, by the way, the Busy Heart Seltzer text line. Were you mad at DK, or did you feel bad for him because we love him so much? Were you mad, or did you feel bad, Stacey?
I wasn't mad. It was kind of a head-scratcher moment where you're like, I don't think DK Metcalf will make this mistake again. And I don't know if you saw it on the broadcast. From the press box, DK Metcalf gets into the end zone. He's on the ground. He looks up at the refs that signal that it's going to be a touchback. He turns. He's like sitting kind of like facing the ground with his head on the ground. And he slams the ground a couple times in a row. Like, he's so mad and frustrated with himself. And I know that's not necessarily the version of DK Metcalf that some folks saw on the sideline, where he had to kind of like get back into it and get in a good mood and stay neutral. But he was livid in the end zone, clearly with himself, right? There's no one else to be mad at. You can't do it. You can't make that mistake ever again.
I mean, knowing DK, working with DK, I was so mad. So mad, because he is better than that. And he knows he's better than that. It's just those moments you cannot have. And I am so grateful that we're able to sit here on Monday and say that that was just a note of the story, and that it wasn't the thing that cost them the game. Now, eventually, I think when you talk about Stacey, him coming back and him moving on and having to smile and on the sidelines, that's what everybody was telling him to do. Hey, get over it. We need you, right? So don't be mad at the guy for having a short-term memory. You want him to, because he ended up coming back and having the game-winning touchdown at the end of the game. But in that moment, yeah, I was extremely frustrated and mad because, man, that would have been a critical moment. And who knows how the game might not even been close at the end had he not made that mistake. That's one that he cannot make again. He will not make again. That's why my anger turned to, man, I just hope he can really redeem himself.
How mad was Russell at him? Because I think what I heard
mad.
Was that Russell chewed him out, but then they showed him kind of like, you know, tapping him on the back after a
yes.
few minutes. Like, did Russell rip into him?
I've never seen Russell that mad. Like,
yeah.
visibly that mad in a game. I've seen him be frustrated. I've never seen him mad like that, and for good reason. And so, yeah, him and DK have a good relationship. He can go up to him and anybody at this point. I think Russell Wilson is at the point where he's holding guys accountable and saying, you can't ever do that again. But hey, let's move on. We've talked it out. Let's move on. I need you. Come back. Get your head right, because you're going to get another opportunity to win the football game. And sure enough, that's exactly how it finished.
At least it didn't happen at the end of the game, right? Better early than late. But if you want to make yourself feel better about it, go to YouTube and YouTube DeSean Jackson, like, early celebration. He did it in college, and he did it when he was a rookie in the NFL. So,
and wait. There's a third time. There's a third time. He did it in high school at the U.S. Army All-American game. He tried to do a flip into the end zone and landed a yard short. He's done it three times, Tom.
Thrice. Question two.
Not once, not twice, but thrice. All right, question two.
Number two.
We have a lot of discussion up here about MVP talk and how Russell's been ripped off basically for the entirety of his career, and he looks like an MVP so far. So why do I see people in media getting indignant or offended, it seems, about early season MVP talk? Our friend, and I mean friend because I like him, we've had him on a million times, Greg Rosenthal over at the NFL Network says, his tweet is this: normalize mocking any use of the phrase MVP contender after 19% of the season is over. Meaning, like, why have a discussion about MVP after only three games? It's a silly discussion.
Right.
I disagree, Greg. I disagree. When you've got quarterbacks who are playing as well as guys like Russell Wilson and probably Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson tonight. What's the problem with that, Stacey?
I just also don't like the idea of mocking people for having sports opinions. Like, have I done it? Absolutely. Do I like that people do it? No. I especially don't like it when it gets to, like, I'm sorry, Russell Wilson is playing like an MVP, and the reason we talk about it is because he hasn't had MVP votes before. Like, there's a basis to the conversation and a point to the conversation. It's not just coming out saying, like, oh, Nick Foles, MVP game from him. You know what I mean? Like, you're saying Russell Wilson is doing insane things to start the season, and he is playing like an MVP caliber player. Will this be the year? There's a point to the conversation. So don't mock anyone for that.
No, I think it's ridiculous, and I think fans can be fans and have fun, but also the media does it too. What are you talking about? You can sit there and be as indignant as you want, but I guarantee you, in years past, you probably referred to Patrick Mahomes this season last year as an MVP-type performance 2 years ago, right? I mean, there are countless times that we've looked at this, and media have just heaped upon praise of players early on. And you know what? That early campaigning or that early talk from media usually ends up being true down the stretch as well. I have rarely heard guys be a part of the, like, serious MVP conversation early in the season that weren't anywhere near it towards the end. Usually these things stay true. And I think Russell Wilson right now is the clear-cut guy that you would pick right now. And I don't see that necessarily going away. I think this is going to be a special year for Seahawks fans and Russell Wilson in particular. And I can't wait to see how it unfolds.
Yeah, there's no conversation that can really be contained on Twitter. I think we all know that, especially in sports. Question three.
Number three.
Chris Chris Carson got hurt, and I didn't realize this in the moment. I didn't really realize it until later when the video of it was tweeted out. But how dirty was the Tristan Hill play on Carson when he gator rolled him? Carson's on the ground. Tristan Hill comes rolling over him, hurts him if he wasn't hurt already. What kind of a play was that, Stacey?
It was hecka dirty. It was dirty. Let me tell you what. When I saw the play happen, I thought Chris Carson broke his leg. I thought his leg was removed from his body. It looked really, really bad on the replay. Thank goodness Pete Carroll said that it's not that severe. It's essentially like a grade one sprain. No long-term damage. Whether or not he'll play this week remains to be seen. I would lean toward them playing it safe and not starting him. But oh my gosh, that could have been bad. What are you doing, Tristan Hill? Chris Carson's teammate's not happy about it either, if you guys haven't seen KJ Wright's tweet. I'm not going to read it on air because there's a little bit of an expletive in there, but not happy.
Yeah, this is the type of stuff that cannot be a part of this game. You see this happen in high school. You see it happen sometimes in college. And it's still not okay, but you see some of that reckless behavior happen at those levels. These are professionals. And these are guys that are looking out for each other. This is a different mentality. Yeah, you're on different teams, but you're also part of the same brotherhood. This stuff is nowhere okay to be a part of this game. And I guarantee you that not only the Seahawks are going to be seeking some sort of punishment. I don't know what's end up going to happen. I just think probably a fine's going to happen. I don't know if there will be a suspension. I doubt it. But if the Dallas Cowboys leadership group isn't going to Hill and saying, hey, we can't have that anymore, then they're doing things wrong. Like, there's no room for that in this game. And I guarantee you, they're lucky, Tristan Hill and the Dallas Cowboys, they're lucky that this happened at the end of the game when things were on the line. Because if this happened early on, you can bet there would probably be some retaliation.
You mean, I mean, I would love to see, like, a pancake block as retaliation for that. Like, I would love to see O-linemen getting pretty nasty out there.
There'd be a little extra something-something from a defensive player to an offensive player or, yeah. You know, hey, you get ours, we're going to get yours, or just going at Hill himself. But, yeah, he pulled two plays at the end of the game, and he's fortunate that it happened there instead of the beginning.
All right, if you missed the show, don't forget you can listen to it via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. We'll ask Mike Salk what he thinks about this one next.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Joining us now, Mike Salk. Mike, I have to ask you, we have plenty of good stuff to talk about. I don't mean to start off on a negative note, but we are getting to the defense next. So in keeping with that theme, when Dak Prescott and the Cowboys got the ball back in the fourth quarter, did you think Seattle would stop them?
No. Okay. In fact, I was hoping that they would give up quick points and give Russell another opportunity to win the game again. That was what I was hoping for. Honestly, I was kept thinking like, well, put as much, like, just let him go. Like, just give them the touchdown and then have the ball again with, like, you know, if they had a minute and a half with two timeouts, Russ has the ball in a tie game. Wouldn't you feel good about that? Even if Dallas had scored quickly and gone for two and taken a 1-point lead, like, I trust Russ to go down and get a field goal at the end of the game. And I even wondered whether or not throwing the touchdown to DK would have been a better move, right? Just getting the first down rather than getting the touchdown there and bleeding out the clock, kicking a field goal, win the game, and go home happy. Like, it's a weird difference in the NFL, and it's not even just the Seahawks. I mean, I think for the most part, if you give a decent NFL quarterback, and there are probably, let's see, 32 teams, I bet there's 20, maybe somewhere in that range, quarterbacks, that I would say if they get the ball in that situation, they should at least be able to go down and get a field goal kicked. And so any team scares you in that spot. You the ends of games when they get into 2-minute drills in the NFL are all about the offense. And for the defense to actually come up with a stop seems to be a big rarity for me.
Salk, it was amazing during this game because there were times, first half, third quarter, where, gosh, it just felt like things were hard. It was hard offensively. And then you look at the stat line, it's like, okay, Russell Wilson throws for 300 yards, he throws for 5 touchdowns, could have been 6, but potentially. This offense is just operating at a different level where the expectations are so high. What did it feel like to you?
Yeah, it was strange, right? All of a sudden you look up, it's the fourth quarter, and they haven't scored a point since the half, right? I was like, really? They scored the 30 in the first half, and you were waiting for that to just kind of continue. And it didn't seem frustrating because they were moving the ball and then stalling out. It wasn't so much the quick three and out, get behind the sticks. I know that happened once, and they had a couple of those. But it was more they would move the ball but just not able to get it quite far enough to be able to get points off of it. So some of it was a little bit of a field position change and this and that. And Dallas was moving it really effectively. I mean, you know, there are some advantages, obviously, to the amount that the Seahawks are throwing the ball, and the quick strike offense has been great. One of the flip sides is it gets your defense right back out there again, though. And that I think, has been a negative, especially while they're as beat up as they've been. I mean, it's not just that they've struggled. It's that they're missing so many guys. And so you just keep throwing them back out there, and there's the defense, and there's the defense, and there's the defense. And the fact that they've now given up 400 yards essentially passing in all three of their games, it's unheard of. This is through three games, at least according to yards, the worst passing defense, I think, in NFL history.
But they've gone up against a couple or three really good passing offenses. So I'll ask you this. Even with their weaknesses, are you confident that they can win a Super Bowl? I am.
I'm confident that they can get close. I don't know if I'm confident. I'm certainly not confident that they will, and I don't think you're saying that. Can they? Sure. Their offense is that good, and their defense has been able to come up with a couple of really big spots and big moments. But I think, honestly, I want to see what they look like in the division before I commit one way or the other on that. One nice thing is, other than the quarterbacks they'll face in their division, they don't really face anybody that I'm that scared of. I may have to retract at some point on Josh Allen if he keeps playing the way he has so far. I mean, he really did look good. I watched a lot of that game yesterday. So as of now, outside of the division quarterbacks, I think he's the best left on their list. Like, there's a lot of meh in the quarterbacks that they're expecting to face now going forward. But here's the flip side of that, and we saw this last year. When Andy Dalton or Nick Mullins or Matt Schaub are able to put up big numbers passing on your defense, it's not even just about the quarterbacks you face. It's about you. And they struggle to get pressure a lot. Alton Robinson definitely was an improvement over what we've seen. But again, we'll wait and see how long a rookie can hold out like that. They struggle to cover. And without Quentin Dunbar, that looked worse. And now the injuries are starting to take hold. And so, yeah, I am really concerned about their defense. As good as the offense is, I shudder to think that this is going to look like one of Peyton Manning's Colts teams or something. I never thought that's what we would see here in Seattle with Pete Carroll.
I mean, I guess the good thing you can say about it is that Seattle's at least leaning into it. Like, can you imagine this team if they were still trying to be like, well, we'll just run heavy and we'll score late? I mean, you'd be like, we're in way too deep of a hole. You need Russell Wilson to get 4 touchdowns in the fourth. So thankfully they're leaning into it. But
you know what? You know what, though? I have a feeling, it's just a gut feeling. There's no way to prove this.
I can't tell if I'm going to like what you're going to say.
They'd be 3-0 with their old offense, too.
I don't like it. I don't like what you said. I don't believe you.
I think it's true.
No, it's not.
I think it is. And I think if you follow the history of what the Seahawks have done, and none of the teams they've played have really been very good. Patriots are a good team, maybe not a great one. I think that they would probably be 2-1 or 3-0 either way. And the games would look different, and they'd have some different stats associated with them. And I think playing the game that way probably would have helped their defense and might have tired them out. And eventually, you know, Russ would have made his couple of plays at the end. But remember, Pete's thing has always been keep it close and win it late. And I think they would have been able to do those same things against the teams they did them against.
I mean, two things. One, I'll say this. Of the three teams they faced, only one did the strength of the defense lie with the secondary. The other two, the strength of the defense lied with not even the front seven, but even just the defensive line. So I don't know how successful they would have been running the ball, although I do think they are successful doing that. Like, don't get me wrong. I love watching Chris Carson. He's phenomenal. I think they're good at doing it. I am curious to see if they ever have a game where they take over. And that said, one of the conversations we always have is like, well, what if Russell Wilson isn't always at his best? You want the defense to step up, but you know, leaning into what you're saying, Salk, I think one other weapon they do have that we don't look at is Chris Carson and that run game. Well, if Russell Wilson isn't at his best, you have Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde. But you look at the slate of games they have coming up. I mean, do any of the defenses make you nervous, too?
Well, certainly in the division they do. I mean, I think all three teams in their division on the right day can play some really good defense. I mean, I'm not going to sit around and panic over Miami. Buffalo looks like a very complete team. I don't know that either their offense or defense is incredible, but both I would put in the pretty darn good category. So, yeah, I think you're worried about a couple of those defenses that you will face. I mean, there's good teams in the NFL. But as you start projecting forward and seeing where this thing's going long term, yeah, you're going to have a dogfight on your hand in all six of your division games. You know, try to see where you end up this year. I think 11-5 is certainly not just a goal, but something you should expect at this point after starting 3-0. You're hoping for 12-4. You now have a division lead, which is great. And as you look across the league, I mean, Green Bay in the NFC is looking like your chief competitor right now. And watching Aaron Rodgers playing some great football, his offense is working the way you expect it to. The Saints don't look as good as they did. In fact, the whole NFC South does not look as good as it once did. The NFC East is a complete total joke. Doesn't matter that they're going to be on Fox every single week as the lead story because they're the blue-blooded programs of the NFL. But all four of those teams absolutely stink. So you've put yourself in a really good spot where there's really only a few other legitimate Super Bowl contenders. You've got all three teams in your division other than you. You got maybe Tampa because they got Tom Brady, and you got Green Bay. And after that, who are you really concerned about for the Super Bowl?
Good stuff, as always, Mike. Thank you so much for joining us.
All righty. See you guys.
All right, now we're going to be giving out some grades for this defense, going into what we liked, what we didn't like. What I got to say, Tom, out of all of us, had the best grade. That's next.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. Seahawks defense gave up 522 net yards to the Dallas Cowboys yesterday. I believe their average is 497, just under 500 yards per game over 3 weeks. Obviously, that's three weeks into the season, so a lot still to be improved upon there. They get out of a close call with some injuries to Jamal Adams. But overall, Tom, you were, I don't want to say impressed, but you're not worried about the defense. You know what I mean? Like, a C isn't, I'm impressed with you. A C is, I didn't want to fail you.
Yeah, it's more the type of C that I got on my report cards.
Hey.
When I brought it home, my parents saw the A, they saw the three Bs, but when they saw the C, they flipped out. It was like, what are you doing?
You didn't ever try to argue it up from a C?
No, I couldn't. It was, no.
You didn't
no
state
point.
Your case?
How are you ever going to get into college if you're getting C's? Well, I'm not getting C's. I got one C, and it's in a subject I'm not good at, biology. So that's kind of where I'm going with this. It's a C that looks really ugly, but it actually isn't, because they're not an A and three Bs. They're more like three A's and a B in every other department offensively.
Okay.
As I said to Salk a second ago, I think that they can get to a Super Bowl even with the weaknesses that they have. And to be honest, I'm not really sure what the specific weaknesses are. I'll go to Jake for that in a second, because Quandre Diggs, I thought, had a good game yesterday. Jamal Adams has been a monster for the most part this season. I know he got hurt yesterday and he was kind of quiet before that, or at least he looked like he was. And they've got maybe some problems at corner. But you know what they do? Like they always have, no matter what personnel they have out there, they come up with big plays. How about cut number 15?
Prescott stands strong. It's picked off. Griffin picks it off, coming near side. Makes one man miss, dives out of the way at the 35. The Seahawks have the ball back, and they've got 36 seconds left. A beautiful play. Shaq Griffin has been on Amari Cooper all day long and has been stride for stride, and that time he just undercuts that route, picks it off, and the Seahawks are in business.
Yeah, now remember, That came right after the 4th and 4 that they didn't convert, I think. So it kind of got them right back to where they were just a few minutes ago. I mean, who knows how much different the game would have gone. And then there was the other – there was the strip sack fumble by Jaron Reed. I mean, they do come up with big plays at the right time. It seems like a tenuous thing to have to rely on every game. I get that. It's nerve-wracking. But that's just the way it is. And, look, we've watched this team under Pete Carroll forever. I have faith. I have faith that the strengths will outweigh the weaknesses. And even if you want to change it to D's get degrees, I'm fine with that. Call it a D. But they're getting a degree because they passed.
Seahawks have given up over 1,100 yards over the first three games, averaging 497. This from AP's Tim Booth. I just have to let you guys know this. He said, doing some research about the last time the Seahawks were 3-0, and it really is crazy how good that defense was in 2013. The Seahawks defense allowed 440 yards passing total over the first three games combined. Combined. I mean, we're talking like they're allowing more than that per game right now. Jake, here's my question for you, and I'm sure it's a similar question Tom would have. When we're looking at assigning blame, Tom and I love doing this. We want to assign blame. We want to figure out who we can turn to say, be better, and we can point. We love pointing. We want to point. Where do you turn, right? Is this busted coverage? Is this not executing plays? Is this a prevent defense? Is this bend but don't break just not working because they're also allowing 70% conversion in the red zone over three games? I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot to unpack. And you're talking about the finger pointing, the demonstrative finger pointing. You! It's your fault. You got to be better. Unfortunately, you could do that to a whole bunch of people right now. But there's a couple things that I have to bring things back and to bring things into the conversation and context of what's going on. First thing that I want to say is, how many games has this group consistently been able to play together? As a whole unit, same group of guys, not one.
Zero.
Up to this point. Not one. Bruce Irvin injury, Marquise Blair injury, Quentin Dunbar out of this last game injury. Even your third string safety, Lano Hill, was out and inactive because of injury. Jordan Brooks gets hurt early on in the game. Jamal Adams, your big playmaker, gets hurt in the third quarter. So many injuries have occurred on this defense that they have yet to been able to play together consistently as a group. And when you're not able to play consistently as a group, you're not always going to have that trust. And there's going to be kinks that you're going to have to work through in order to solidify things, okay? So that's number one. That's the easiest thing to say in this whole equation, that when you get a little bit healthier and with the and the same group of guys are able to play together on a consistent basis throughout a couple weeks, I think you do see improvement. I feel pretty confident in saying you will see improvement. But on the flip side, if you want to point fingers, you got to point it at Trey Flowers and Shaquille Griffin in my mind. Like, although Shaquille made that amazing, timely interception, I think Brooke, my wife, the first things that came out of her mouth was that the guy that consistently plays soft and is getting beat underneath all the time? And yes, yes, it is. But he made an aggressive play, undercutted that dig route, and is able to make a huge interception before the half, and Russell Wilson, this offense, is able to capitalize. So that play was big. But then he gave up a massive, one of the worst plays I've seen from a DB in terms of the touchdown he gave up to Cedric Wilson. It was a crossing route, and I had no idea what he was trying to accomplish. He was trying to, were you trying to undercut it and then, you know, intercept the ball? You weren't anywhere close. That the DB in that situation is taught to be on the top side of the back of the shoulder so that if you can't get to the ball, you can at least secure the tackle. Shaquille Griffin did neither one of those things, and because of a lack of technique and execution, Cedric Wilson walks in for a touchdown. He gives up a deep ball to Gallup in goal line situations where he's taught not to do so. Trey Flowers gets beat multiple times, gives up a touchdown. Like, those are things that you cannot have happen. Easy, cheap, big touchdowns. This defense can't afford it.
Okay, so are they being, like you just said, they're taught not to do that. Do you mean that they're taught fundamentally, or this coaching staff is telling them not to do it? Because when I, like, I see number 21 out there, Flowers running around, you know, not within 10 yards of a defender, and it's 20 yards here, 20 yards here, 30
Correct.
Yards here. And I know Dallas is a good passing team. They just are. They've gone up against three really good passing teams. I think New England is, but I know that the other two are in Atlanta and Dallas. So is it Ken Norton? Is it the secondary's coach? Like, or is it just that Shaq Griffin is a good, not great corner, and we don't know if Trey Flowers is a starter in this league? Like, are we just weak at corner? Can we just say
it's the latter?
We're weak at corner.
Yes, it's the latter. We're weak at corner. 100%.
But what changed heading into the season? Because we were talking 3 weeks ago about how this could be the best secondary they've had since 2013.
I think part of the equation was Quentin Dunbar. And I think Dunbar just showed, with him being out, how important he truly is when you see Trey Flowers have games like this. And Shaquille Griffin, I never was counting on Shaquille Griffin to come in and be an all-pro. I think he, and I've said this on the show, that I believe that he is a good to great corner. He's not an elite corner. When he plays at his best, he can be a very, very good corner in this league. But typically, he is a good corner. And he gives up a lot of plays. So when you look at this group, to me, that was the biggest problem. In Pete Carroll's defense, you don't get beat over the top. Whatever you do, you can have death by a thousand cuts. And that, when we talk about strategy of the game, mm-hmm. and the way this offense is playing, they have consistently given the defense multiple score leads heading into the second half. At some point in the second half, the defense has given it up. If you give that up over a slow turn, right, and you're having the offense continue to march down the field, and they have to earn it, then guess what? The clock wears out as well. And so you put that other team in a disadvantage because they're not able to get past their deficit because they just simply can't move the ball fast enough up and down the field. With this game against Dallas, there was big play after big play, big strike after big strike. Those are the things that drives Pete Carroll and this coaching staff nuts. And it was simply due to either a lack of playmaking. I think Trey Flowers right now, you just see his confidence. It's just not there. And I feel for the young man tremendously because I really like him. But he just doesn't have it from what we saw this last game. And Shaquille Griffin, he's way too up and down, way too inconsistent. And that play that I was talking to you about in terms of the touchdown that he gave up to Cedric Wilson, that was horrible fundamentals mm-hmm. that I know he's being coached up on to not do that. So it's a lack of execution more so, in my opinion, than it is the scheme.
All right, we'll get back to this in the halftime show at 1:30. But first, we're going to have some fun. We're going to go through the plays of the game next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.